Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 82 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm your host, Neil Tyra, and today I have as my guest, Keith Magnus, an accident attorney or personal injury attorney out of New Orleans, who I met at Ernie Svensson's attorney boot camp, autopilot boot camp, back a few months ago. And I'm delighted to have Keith on with us today. And we have this interview that has a wide range of topics, and you're going to hear a lot of things about how to run a practice, but more importantly, I think in the long run, is how to form relationships with your existing clients, how to provide outstanding client service, because that is the hallmark of Keith's practice, and that is why he is as successful as he is, and it just comes through loud and clear in this interview, and I think that's the big takeaway from today's session. So I know, without any further delay, let's listen to Keith Magnus. Keith Magnus, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Well, thank you, Neil. Thank you for having me.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today, Keith. Keith, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. I'm a sole practitioner in Gretna, Louisiana. It's a suburb of New Orleans on the west bank of the river, and I help people injured in car, truck, and motorcycle accidents keep and receive more of the compensation they deserve, which obviously indicates I'm a car accident attorney, not a personal injury attorney, a car accident attorney. There's a distinction there. Started actively practicing law in 2005, actually graduated from law school in 2003, but took a couple-year hiatus, was with the feds for a couple years, but then fell back on my degree. First, starting out in big law, if you will, in New Orleans. Big law in New Orleans is, I'd classify as a firm with 35 or 40 lawyers or more.
Sure.
And did that for a number of years. And finally, in 2011, opened up my own shop where I've been ever since.
Great. Now, had you always harbored ideas of being a solo practitioner? Or did that come about for some reason?
Yeah, I think I always had the entrepreneurial spirit. But like so many, when you come out of school, and I thankfully did very well, finished at the top of my class at law review and whatnot. So I was being courted by a lot of the major firms in New Orleans. And quite honestly, they throw a lot of money at you. So I was pretty enamored by that and the idea of, hey, career services was really pushing me. Hey, if you have this opportunity, you need to exercise it. I think maybe their underlying motive was having an alumnus who was making a good salary who could then give back to the school. But anyway, tried that out for a number of years, doing commercial litigation, very heavy, complex stuff. But just always found that my smaller cases, the ones working for smaller or mid-sized businesses where I was dealing truly with individuals and where the stakes were higher, if you will, for them, meant a lot more to me. So I eventually found myself going out on my own, originally doing a little bit of everything, kind of practicing door law. Somebody walked through the door and they had a pulse and a checkbook, and it wasn't something I was totally uncomfortable with. I would do it. But, a roundabout way, ended up focusing my practice on car accidents, based upon my own individual experiences in that arena.
Your experience is completely different from mine in a couple of different ways. Didn't graduate at the top of my class, and law firms were not throwing money at me to come join them. So I'm not really personally all that familiar with that aspect of entering the practice, but I do understand a little bit about car accident cases and personal injury law. Tell us a little bit about how your office is set up now that you are a thriving solo practitioner.
Sure. In the beginning, it truly was me, myself, and I. I was the one answering the phone, opening the mail, filing the documents, doing the legal technical work and everything else. Wore every single hat that goes into a law firm, the receptionist, the secretary, the paralegal, and the attorney, and the owner. Over time, I started to incorporate some virtual assistants into my practice. One of the first ones I adopted was trying to get the phones off of my back, having that buffer and somebody who could answer the phone when I wasn't there. And I used Ruby Receptionist to do that. And they are phenomenal. Still use them today, although their role has morphed from being the principal person answering my phone to actually being a backup during business hours and primary after hours or on the weekends. Because I now have not only a full-time legal assistance, but a full-time paralegal, as well as some additional virtual assistance on the marketing side. I have a bookkeeper that's virtual. I've never met her. I've met her bosses, but I've never met the actual bookkeeper assigned to me. So that's it. You know, and if you walked in my office, you would see two, you know, bright, shining, smiling faces other than myself. But behind the scenes, there are additional personnel working remotely to make things go.
Sure. Now, no other associate attorneys?
No, I have used individuals. On an as-needed basis, we'll either co-counsel with somebody, or I've actually been exploring the idea of having an of counsel, not necessarily like a contract attorney, but somebody I can go to, know, like, and trust when the workload requires it, and bring them in, have them listed officially as of counsel on my malpractice insurance and everything else, so I could further leverage myself.
Yeah, you know, we had Lisa Solomon on a while back. She runs a outsourcing virtual associate attorney type firm, contract attorney. So one can hire one of her attorneys to work on a specific case, as an example. And I know as a result of our program then with Lisa, that she's gotten a couple of clients from that. So that's something that one might consider going forward. Tell me a little bit. I mean, I know you have a personal reason for doing accident law, car accident law, but aside from that, unless you want to share that, what is different about practicing that aspect of personal injury law as opposed to, say, other types of models for legal practice?
Sure. Well, it all obviously does stem from my own personal experience with the death of my mother in 2001 in an accident. And, you know, at the time I was in law school, I was a second-year student, said I was blowing and going. I was a law review candidate at that point, but I'm the only lawyer in the family, first generation, if you will. So I was kind of viewed as the attorney, even though I was only in law school. So that the legal aspects of the loss of my mother were kind of tasked to me. You know, my brothers and I were trying to figure out how to process this entire thing, because my father was injured as well as in the accident. And we're trying to get him better and at the same time handle the issues involving the death of my mom. And when I reached out to members of the legal community, I was just blown away at a couple of things. One was what I perceived as the lack of empathy in that type of situation. I just got the feeling that they all were more concerned about the fee, and I had a little bit of an issue with the fee that I was being quoted by most of the attorneys in my market. Because quite frankly, there wasn't an issue of liability or anything in this accident. It was just a quantum. And, you know, I just needed somebody to help guide me through that to ensure that we're being fairly treated. And I left that experience with a belief that I know that the insurance company and their lawyers aren't looking out for me, but I just didn't feel like I was being fairly treated or treated with the level of empathy and all that I would desire in that situation. So when I formed my own firm, I made that the ground floor rule. You know, we're going to focus on client service, empathy being, you know, the utmost important, and really pick one area of the law, and that being automotive injury work, because that's where my experience came from. And, you know, it allows me a couple of things. One, I can drill an inch wide and a mile deep in one particular area and kind of become a quote-unquote specialist in that area. And really to focus my team on that client service model. I mean, that's a given. You know, the team knows that client service is our number one thing. And if I find that anybody on the team is not delivering that level of service that we desire, and we constantly survey our clients using written surveys, actually asking them to grade us on certain areas to ensure that we are delivering that level of experience for them, that being excellent and nothing but the best. So, you know, I don't know if that necessarily answers your exact question.
You could not have answered it better, Keith. You know, I hesitated to bring the subject up because I know that you've told that story, but I don't know that it's necessarily my place to try and draw that out from you, but I appreciate that you share that. And I know that, you know, the world is full of personal injury lawyers, I being one of them. And, you know, you always get the question, well, what sets you apart? Why is your firm different? And you have to have some kind of differentiation in order to, you know, attract clients to your practice. And I mean, if you go to your website and you watch your video, which I want to ask you about in a moment, if you watch your video, you can't help but come away from that without thinking these people really do care. And it comes across in your presentation here, and it comes across in your video, and I'm sure it emulates all the way through your practice, and that's what sets you apart.
I agree. And you know, and the difficulty has been getting that message out. I don't believe in the typical injury type ads that you see. I mean, I think in every market, I travel some with my business, and I'll be in Chicago, and I'm sure when I go to Chicago, I'll probably turn on the TV and see the "your pain is my gain" type advertising. You've been in a wreck, you need a check, call me. I don't believe in that. I believe in focusing on, we are going to guarantee you excellent client service, and we're going to stand behind that guarantee. Where if you go on my website, I actually, in consultations, I give them a written guarantee. If you don't believe that we're living up to our stated level of customer service, you can walk away from our engagement and I'll waive my fee. I put that out there.
Tell me how that customer engagement, that client engagement manifests itself. What do you, aside from keeping the client informed, which if you're doing that, you're ahead of the game with respect to most, you know, most practices. But aside from that, how does that manifest itself with respect to the client?
Well, it manifests itself from the standpoint that many injury firms, especially the high volume shops here in my market, New Orleans, when you call them, you don't even speak to an attorney. You get some intake person who forwards you over to maybe a paralegal who sends an investigator out to your house with a clipboard and a pen and a stack of papers. You get signed up. You'll go to the doctor. You don't get updates, you know, however many months down the road after you're finished treating. Somebody calls you up and says, come pick up a check. We believe in being very personally involved and meeting individually with every potential client. I meet every single client that comes into the firm or potential client. I may not be able to sit down with them for an hour and a half during a consultation, but I will meet with them because I want them to see me in person. And I want to see them. I want to kind of feel them out. Sometimes, and I tell people this, look, I may walk in a room and you may sense something about me you don't like, and I may not be the right person for you. And vice versa is true. I may walk in and sense something about the client that I think that we're not the best fit for them. And either I make a referral or simply tell them, look, I think we're not the right firm for you. I'm sorry. Then throughout the engagement, communication is absolutely key. It is a policy in our office that we will contact our clients no less than once, but most of the time twice per month, just to check in on them. I mean, from as simple as calling them and saying, and we have kind of a script, hey, call it up, check it in. When's the last time you went to the doctor? How are you feeling? What's going on? Anything you need to let us know? Here's some developments that have happened, if any, that we want to pass on to you. And constantly, we will get people who come to our office who've been with an attorney in the past some years ago, and they say, look, I'm not going back to him or her because they were horrible. I never heard from them. When I'd call them, my phone calls wouldn't get returned. Then they come on board with us, skeptical because of that prior experience. And at the end, when I give them that survey, they say, you know what? It is a night and day difference. Y'all treated me like family. I was constantly kept up to date on my case by email and phone calls. I mean, this has been a great experience. And that, it builds champions. You know, there's no better advertising than word of mouth. And when that guy or gal goes out and their friend gets in an accident, they say, look, don't bother calling anybody else. Call this guy. And that person may not know me because I'm not a household name, because I'm not on TV beating them up on the airwaves. But, you know, I now have a champion in the community who can say, look, I've been there. I've been through this. It's like no other. And that's what we aspire to do. I mean, that's the rule.
Can you fake that, Keith?
I don't think you can. You know, everybody who works in my office has been involved in an accident. And my two actual people who, if you call my office right now, there's only one. If you got in contact my paralegal Rick or my assistant Kellen, both of them have not only been in accidents, but they've suffered more serious injuries. So they know what it's like to sit in that client's chair. So when they came on board, and that's one of my key things in an interview, I ask my potential employees, have you ever been in an accident? Yes or no? If yes, what was your experience like? What didn't you like about that? What did you? I want to, you know, let them know that if you come on board, here is the level of service that we guarantee. And if you don't think you're up for giving it, if you think you're just going to fake it, this place is not for you. And I think that the entire team, having had that experience, is empathetic towards our clients. And that's something I don't believe that you can fake. You either are or you aren't.
So, you know, this monthly or bi-monthly contact with the clients, how do you keep track of that? You put that in your case management tool as a reminder, or how's that work?
Sure. We have basic tools, Excel spreadsheet, with all the actively, and there's a difference between somebody who's an injured client who's actively treating versus somebody who's not or who's in litigation status. So there's a couple different varieties. But for example, somebody comes in, they sign with us, they're an actively treating client. They go into a database, and the procedure in our office is the second and fourth week of every month. Every person on that list will be contacted. And the preferred method is by phone. And after so many attempts by phone, if they're unsuccessful, staff can then turn to email or texting. And if those attempts aren't successful after two attempts, we then send a please call us letter through the mail. So that's how we systematize that. So the list, you know, grows and it expands and contracts depending upon case load. And then I can look at that spreadsheet at a high level and see who's being contacted and what's going on. And then those notes are also copied into the matter using our case management system, if you will, or is Clio. So it's matter specific.
Right.
So at any given time, anybody on the team can jump into any specific matter and look at the notes and see what the most recent activity was from contacts with doctor's offices, documents received, or contacts with the client. So that's how we manage that monthly process. Is we just set out as a matter of policy, those calls will be made, and they have to be made no matter what. Even if they have to pay overtime during the second and fourth week of each month, the clients will be contacted, preferably by phone. And then the fallback after so many phone attempts fail is email and text.
So we've talked about outsourcing work from the office and your case management tool being Clio. Are you using Clio for billing? Well, I guess for contingency purposes, you don't have to use Clio for billing, right?
Well, I mean, I do it from an accounting standpoint because my accounting system is zero. So those two integrate. So as we track expenses in a matter, it goes into Clio.
Okay.
And then at the end of the case, once the fee is actually generated, that information is put into Clio. The bill, quote unquote, is generated and marked as paid. And then that will talk to my accounting system, Zero, who my virtual bookkeeper is keeping track of, you know, for you know, income statements and all those types of things that I then forward on to my CPA at tax time.
And that's all and automated. You don't have to touch that then, right?
No, just input the data and click a couple buttons.
And that's it, yeah. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. Do you want to help more clients but don't have the resources? Do you feel overwhelmed by the amount of work you have to do that you can't even think about getting new clients? If this is you, I urge you to try out Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM that strengthens your practice and can save you hours each week. Daylight has helped thousands of small businesses, including my own, to manage more clients and more cases without adding stress or chaos. With Daylight, you don't need to fumble through files or notes to know where you are in a case. No more CCing your assistant on emails or passing around spreadsheets. And Daylight now has a new team view that helps you see what everyone on your team is working on. You can see everyone's appointments and tasks and easily schedule meetings. To learn how Daylight can help your firm, visit marketcircle.com/daylight and be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Getting a new website design can be a real pain point for attorneys. You're busy practicing law and running your firm, and the last thing you can afford is to waste time dealing with an incompetent design team that doesn't understand what you're trying to accomplish. So if you've been putting off that new website for your law firm, I get it. But what if I told you that getting a new website created for your law firm doesn't have to suck? My friends at Spotlight Branding pride themselves on their responsiveness, on great communication, and on delivering results for their clients. And unlike many law firm marketing companies out there, Spotlight Branding doesn't lock their clients into long-term contracts. In fact, they offer a no-risk, money-back guarantee on their work so you can have total peace of mind while you work with them. I trust the team at Spotlight Branding, as you know, to build and manage my website, as well as manage my social media strategy, my monthly email newsletter, and a whole lot more. I recommend them to solo and small firm attorneys every chance that I get. They're currently offering a special gift for our listeners, so visit spotlightbranding.com/TLE to learn more. Brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. What other technology do you rely upon that you can't live without?
Yeah, probably the biggest one right now is NetDocuments. We use NetDocuments for document management because we are, by and large, a paperless firm. And when I originally started, and I was totally on my own, I used Dropbox and I created a folder system that mimicked what I used to do in paper. So you'd have a correspondence clip, a discovery clip with subfolders produced, privileged, other party documents, depositions, things of that nature. All of that was then mirrored over into NetDocuments when I started to hire staff because I wanted to have a better way to control access to certain things and not, especially if I use virtual assistants. Like if I bring on a contract attorney and they are remote, I can give them access to, let's say, a file, but not the rest of the house, if you will. So NetDocuments is a document management system that we use heavily, and everything goes into it. Everything that comes through our firm is digitized, scanned using a Fujitsu ScanSnap scanner. And once it goes into NetDocuments, we have an integrated tool there that OCRs it in the background. So not only can I search all of my documents by matter, so if I'm in a particular matter, I can do character recognition searches there, but I can expand that to the entirety of our database. So if 5 years from now, I come across a witness or an expert and I say, you know what? I remember we had this person in this other case, but I just can't remember that case. I can go into NetDocuments in the search features and search for that person's name and it'll pull me every single document where they were mentioned ever. So it's extremely powerful and you know, it makes me a lot more nimble. I mean, I lived it, you know, being in depositions and you've got all these big firm lawyers, a name will come up and people are like, well, what do they have to do with this? And I go in my system right there on my laptop, a couple keystrokes, and I've got, hey, yeah, this person is related to this case, this how. And they're like, man, how did you do that? As they sit there with their paralegals, with their binders, I'm like, I got net documents. I've been in trial where it's me and my client, my laptop, and maybe some small, you know, paper exhibits. But then you've got defense counsel, two lawyers, two paralegals, and banker boxes full of material. And I can find information way faster than they can because of net documents. So
I also think in today's day and age, you know, we hear frequently when talking about, you know, juries and stuff, the CSI factor that they're always looking for, you know, that type of demonstrative scientific proof before they make a decision. I think to a degree now, practices such as yours and mine, to not quite to that same extent, but I think we get some credibility by using electronics in the courtroom and at depositions, as opposed to fumbling through a stack full of however well organized papers.
No, I think it certainly helps with the flow of things. I mean, there was a partner, one of the things I took away with from my big firm days, he was very insistent on depositions, even going, as he said, like the Russian ballet. It needed to be smooth and seamless. You don't need to be fumbling through the stack of papers looking for the exhibit while the witness looks at you like you're a bumbling idiot. And it certainly helps to have that level of organization and searchability. You know, I don't think we could do our job without net documents, because some of these cases, I mean, the medical records can be thousands and thousands of pages, of which some of it may just be irrelevant notes, but I can go through and I can segregate hot documents, create a separate folder for that, put tags, highlight things, and it come back digitally, and it's all there.
So, reminds me, what's the nature of your typical case or your typical client? Is it the catastrophic accident case, which requires a lot of work and a lot of manpower, or is it the bread and butter, you know, kind of car accident case, or a mixture of all the above?
It's a mixture. We've gotten more and more catastrophic type injuries. Like, we've got a couple actively working traumatic brain injury cases.
Those are tough.
Yes, it's tough emotionally because.
Yep. That and just because, as you said, the medical records can be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages long.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're extremely expensive to put together because these neuropsychologists and psychiatrists and every kind of expert you need in an effort to try and document the nature of the injury and the effect on the individual, they're not shy about charging you a premium. So, you know, you can't go into that without the full knowledge of how much you're going to spend.
Do you use somebody to review the records for you?
No, I've gotten a lot of, you know, cold solicitations. And there's this one group that I've kind of researched them at a very high level. I haven't really dug hard into it. It's a group of allegedly medical doctors in India who will do record review and summation for a fraction of the cost what even an American RN would do. So it's something, as we continually grow our portfolio of those types of cases, that I think we're going to be forced to consider.
Yep.
But, you know, it's the old 80-20 rule, you know, right. 80% of your revenue comes from 20% of your cases. So the 20% of the cases that are the spinal injury, brain injury, and all are there. But by and large, the bread and butter, what pays the overhead consistently and all, are the soft tissue, not so serious type injury cases, which, you know, require some work, but those are much easier to systematize.
Right.
Because, you know, a rear ender at a red light who just requires 4 to 6 months of conservative care is pretty easy to duplicate over and over again, versus the individual nature of a spinal injury or a brain injury.
However, I happen to know that, as you've said, you know, earlier in the show here, that you treat all those clients the same, whether they're soft tissue or spinal injury.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, we certainly, one, a larger case may take more of your time at any given time. And I have to open and frank conversation with the clients in the very beginning. We have a communications policy, like how you can communicate with the firm to let the clients know when you call in and talk to somebody, whoever answers the phone is going to be charged with handling whatever issue you have. Now, if it's an issue that an attorney or I have to be involved in, chances are I'm not going to be immediately available because I'm either working on your or somebody else's case and I need to be able to focus. So we try to educate our clients on how we communicate, how we process messages. That email is probably the best way to communicate directly with me. But even then, I can't always check my email and return it within 20 minutes or the same day or even within 3 days. Because if I'm in trial, preparing for a major hearing, preparing for a major deposition, I owe that client whose matter is before me, you know, pretty much my undivided attention, because if it was them, they would expect the same. So a lot of it is triage. And I tell them, look, I delegate a lot to my staff and I empower them to help you. But there are certain things inside the firm that either legally an attorney has to do or just from a pure business decision policy standpoint, I say, this is something that I have to be involved in. Don't do it until I bless it or you know, I have to be the one to handle that issue. So.
You know, Keith, as we kind of start to wrap up here, I want to spend just a few minutes talking about your use of video on your website, which I think is one of the more effective illustrations of how you can use video to connect with potential clients and to provide a window as to what your firm is all about and who you cater to. I think the video on your website is outstanding. Tell me a little bit how that came to be. How, you know, what did you do to create that and why did you do so?
Sure. That video that you see on my homepage, kind of the story of why I do what I do, came about, well, the concept came about in the fall of 2015. I was at a conference with about 200 other lawyers. And as part of that conference, there were breakout sessions where a dozen lawyers would get together and we would go over our business plan for 2 days, really dig into it. And everybody got on the hot seat to discuss your business plan and tear it apart and put it back together through constructive criticism and everything else.
That sounds like a fun conference.
Yeah, it's a working conference, but you get a lot accomplished professionally and business-wise. So during that process, I was kind of forced to tell that story because people were kind of critical of my marketing and my messaging, and they discovered that the missing component of that was the why. And they said, look, you need to tell your story. You know, it's a compelling story. It will build empathy and help you relate to people and help them understand why you do things a little bit differently than the norm in your market. So go from that 12-person thing to the 200-member meeting. I just happened to randomly get selected out of those 200 lawyers in a room to have some of my marketing reviewed and critiqued, which required me to go up on stage, sit next to the moderator, and they're showing like images of some of my marketing. And boy, it was, especially the injury lawyers in the market, the idea of charging less than a third, you know, I mean, that was just appalling to them because I was quote unquote cheapening the profession. Well, somebody who was in that 12-person group stood up and said, tell them your story, Keith. And I remember it. And the moderator turned to me and said, well, what is your story? And this was the first time I ever told the story about my mother's death and how that impacted me and my thoughts about the legal profession and why I thought that the lawyers I went to were doing it wrong and how I wanted to do it different. And it was a tough one to get through.
I can imagine. I'm having a tough time just listening to you. Having known the story.
Yeah. And tears were shed. And then at the end of that, the moderator pulls me to the side and says, why isn't any of this on your website? I said, well, I don't want to feel like I'm trying to profit from my mother's death. And he said, no, Keith, we're all a collection of our experiences in life. And you went through this horrible experience and you saw some things in the legal profession that you didn't like. And that has changed the way you operate your firm. You need to let people know that. And he said, I challenge you to write about this. Put it just a blurb, just write a blog, put it on your site about why, you know, that experience with your mother's death and all. And that took me a few months to do that.
I can imagine.
So I got it up there, and he calls me and he says, I see you posted it. That's great. Now you need to do a video. And I was like, man, you're killing me. So it took me a few months to actually research the appropriate video vendor to find, because I knew this was going to be a hard project to do, and I wanted to make sure it was done right. So I ended up settling on a group called Crisp Video Services out of Atlanta.
I know him well.
Yeah, and Mike Mogul was on top of me. He wanted to do this project after reading my story. Said, Keith, I want to do... He said, you have one of the more profound whys that I've ever seen, and I want to do your video. So I ended up going with him, and I couldn't be happier. I came to New Orleans. It was an all-day thing. They shot at my house. They shot at my office. They shot down by the courthouse. Different things, and they put that video together, and it went live for the first time in October of last year, so right at a year ago. And immediately I started seeing things change. One more recent example, I had a woman whose two daughters were involved in an accident on I-10 in New Orleans. She had a consultation schedule with one of my competitors, but apparently had gone to my website during her search for lawyers, because we use Facebook for remarketing. She starts getting my stuff in her Facebook feed, and one of them is our video. She clicked on the video, watched it, called that other lawyer and canceled the appointment and made the appointment with me. Now, she told me this during the initial consultation when I asked her, look, what were you looking at when you decided to contact us? Because I try and find out what was the source of the lead so we could track it. She said, Mr. Agnes, I saw your video. And after I watched that video, I knew you were the lawyer for my girls. And I actually had an appointment with Mr. So-and-so, and I called and canceled that and came right here. And I've heard that type of story more than once.
Yeah.
And I'm you know, shocked, quite frankly, at the reaction. But I get calls from lawyers around the country. Man, I was at some conference and somebody just showed your video as an example. And I wanted to call you and tell you I was moved. I've been blown away by the reaction, quite frankly. Well,
and that's why I wanted to spend some time talking about it, because I suspected it was Chris Video that had done it, because it's indicative of the quality of the work that they do. So if any of our listeners are looking, we'll have the reference in the show notes, but that's crispvideo.com. Pretty straightforward. But It's spectacular, and I can only imagine that it's going to continue to pay dividends for you. But moreover than that, you know, as I've said in the beginning, it really gets across who you are, and who you are is how people are going to connect with you and choose you as your attorney. So I think it's a tremendous resource of yours. And one last thing before we wrap up here, tell me just a little bit about the survey. Is it that you do at the end of the case? Is it a paper survey, or do you do it online, or how do you manage that?
No, I do it in paper format. Some people have challenged me to kind of create a Survey Monkey deal to do it, but you know, in that sense, I'm a little old school. You know, when a case concludes and the client comes in and we're signing settlement documents and all, I say, look, when you and I first met, I gave you a promise that I was going to ensure that we delivered excellent client service. Now, the only way for me to make sure that we did that is for you to give me a grade. And I say, we do this by doing a client satisfaction review, and it's a 3-page review. The first thing is the net, you know, promoter score. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely would you be to recommend us to friends or family or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes into some check the box type things, you know, how would you rate our trustworthiness, our responsiveness, you know, excellent, you know, very good, good, you know, whatever it may be. And then we actually get into narrative questions. For example, like before you hired us, what was your biggest challenge? You know, how did we help you address that challenge? What would you say to somebody who asked you, what was it like working with the Law Office of Keith Matt, you know, things like that. It's 3 pages long. And at the very end, we ask them flat out, may we share your comments with other injured persons who may be, you know, researching our firm for their engagement? Yes or no? If yes, Can we do it by posting your entire name, your first name only, or anonymously? And, you know, by and large, many people allow us to post their entire name. We then take that survey and we put every single one, good, bad, or indifferent. I'm happy to say that there are no bad or indifferent ones, onto our website, every single one. Then the next thing that we're going to do is we're actually going to prepare a binder that is part of the consultation process. If they're waiting in our lobby or in a conference room, they can flip through and actually see the reviews. But this way, we put a little snippet of the review and you can click through and look at the actual review filled out by the actual client in their handwriting, grammatical errors, whatever there are there, because it's their words saying what they thought about our services. And I do that on every single case because God forbid somebody give a negative comment. I mean, I'm going to dig into that. But that's the only way that I can truly ensure. And the comments they leave, especially about my staff, are just imagine, oh, I loved how she would call. Not only would she talk about just about my case, but my mother was sick during all of this. And every time she called me, she asked how my mother was.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, things like that. And I tell my staff, well, get to know these clients, build rapport. You know, if they're going on a vacation, if they're getting married, you know, note that. Tell them congratulations. Let us know. We'll send them a package. I had a young couple who got in a wreck and they were getting married shortly after. When they came back from their honeymoon, they had a wedding gift from us. They were like, man, not even my friends were as responsive as you. I mean, I'm like, no, man, it's a happy time. I'm glad that we're able to be a part of you. You know, I mean, this, we truly do look at this as a relationship life.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think clearly that's why you're successful. So anyway, Keith, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be with me today. For our listeners, we had a little snafu doing this recording. It's my second one this month. So Keith had to come back and do it a second time. And so I'm doubly indebted to you for the time you spent with us today, Keith. Tell our audience a little bit about how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up after this.
Sure. I mean, obviously, our website, www.magnesslaw.com, is a good source to be able to reach out to us. They can reach me by email at klm@magnesslaw.com, or they can feel free to give me a call. 504-264-5587 is the main line.
Terrific. Well, Keith, thanks ever so much. Just another little quick note here. I found the reference. It was episode 22 of The Law Entrepreneur, where we had Lisa Solomon on with Now Counsel Network, a nationwide network of contract attorneys. So we'll put that in the show notes as well. But again, Keith, thanks ever so much for being with us today on The Law Entrepreneur. I wish you the best of luck, and I hope to catch up with you again soon. Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days, and be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift.
And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.